This is a podcast about the hardcore community.
Made by and for those who live authentic lives and embrace hard truths.
We archive the stories of the bands and people who make this lifestyle possible. I'm Josh Lyon.
And I'm Greg Benoit.
And this is the Hardcore Archive Podcast.
All right, so Mike, welcome to my inaugural episode as a co-host of Enterprise Hardcore Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for those.
Thanks for being here. For those of you who don't know Mike Ryan, he's the vocalist for Missing Link, which is one of the most up-and-coming hardcore bands from New York State. If you don't know Mike from Missing Link, and you're lucky enough to still have hair, you might know him as the co-owner of one of Rochester's most popular barbershops, Glory Days Barber Company. And if you don't know him from those two other places, then you certainly know him from his days working the door at Lux. So tell us a bit about your background, where you grew up, and how you got into hardcore.
Yeah, so I grew up about an hour east of here in a small city called Auburn. Kind of close to Syracuse, so we were pretty heavily influenced by Syracuse hardcore and stuff like that. I started going to shows in, I think, 2003, somewhere in there. I was pretty young, like 12, but my older cousin slash best friend, who I still talk to every day, kind of, we had a whole group of like neighborhood kids, like kind of skateboard kids and punks and stuff that kind of got me into it. And If Hope Dies was huge at the time, and they're from my hometown. Like, their drummer was my fifth grade teacher. So, that really kind of sucked me in, I guess, and been going ever since.
Oh man, wild. Yeah. I knew you're from Auburn, and you had some like close affiliations with Syracuse, which I'm a little envious of, because there were times, you know, like 2003, that there was some good stuff going on in Rochester, but Syracuse has had such a strong, consistent scene for decades. I can tell that like Syracuse has influenced you quite a bit, and kind of the hardcore bands that came up out of that area. By your age, most people, I would say, or many people that got into hardcore, you know, when they were 12, 13, 14, have kind of moved on from the music or the ideals that the music represents, you know, but you're clearly one of those folks who are in this for life. Sometimes, unfortunately, at times. Well, yeah, there's worse things you could throw your life away doing. And I've certainly found some of those myself, and this is one of the better ones. So what makes hardcore important to you, and what keeps you coming back?
Yeah, that's kind of a loaded question. I think that there's a lot of different sides to it. Primarily for me would be the music, and you know, sort of like coupled with that would be the people. You know, it was and is a bands and music and people that I related to, and that I continue to relate to still. So I think that's what kind of keeps me interested, even at times when I'm annoyed with the state of things, or if there isn't music coming out that I like, I can still listen to a record that I've been listening to since I was a kid and still love it. And so, yeah, I'd say probably those two things, the music and the people, for sure. You know, that was like a big thing that drew me in, was that it was kind of crazy and chaotic and sort of like a microcosm of the outside world. But that there was people that kind of grew up similarly to me that I related to, and then music from other people like that as well.
Yeah, I get that too. Like, you know, I came from like a very loving, supportive family, but I did at times have like a messed up childhood and didn't always have the best things going on. And hardcore was like a community that basically accepted me as I was, and I could be my authentic self. Whereas like, you know, on the job or in your family or in other places you go in life, you kind of have to put on a little bit of an act for the sake of other people. Hardcore is just such a come as you are place. And you seem like a real authentic, down to earth guy who kind of gets that and would thrive in that kind of environment. Like, not everyone can handle that. Some people, they've got to, you know, they got to have like strict rules or something. They can't just go with the flow or be their authentic selves and be sincere about it. So I totally respect that about you and kind of see that in you and see that in a lot of people who've stuck around for a long time and made it a consistent part of their life. Just like, give me a quick rundown of some of your favorite bands and which ones have influenced your life the most.
Oh man. there's a lot, you know, the cool thing about growing up where I did was, a show would be like a hardcore band, a grind band, a death metal band, you know, it was an indie rock band. So my musical taste and what I relate to is really broad. But as far as like real hardcore stuff goes, kind of like some of the classics, Blood for Blood, Cold as Life, Marauder, Biohazard. But I really stray pretty far outside of that too, into black metal and indie rock and rap, all, you know, all sorts of stuff. I, you know, my dad is like a huge hip hop guy, when I was a kid. So that really influenced me a lot too. Especially like Texas rap, which I feel like is a pretty specific little, yeah, like not a lot of people are super into that. But I'd say those bands I mentioned, and there's definitely some, you know, If Hope Dies influenced me in like a huge way. The Red Death, who I'm sure you remember from like Bath, and half of them were from Auburn too, I think. So like those more sort of like metalcore, like almost Swedish metalcore bands, those really influenced me early on too. And I mean, man, there was so many cool things happening. Where like looking back at when I was a kid, so many of those records hold up now, like stuff that came out all in one year, you know?
Yeah.
But everything from, you know, 100 Demons to like, I don't know, Word is a Virus or something like that from Syracuse, or like some of the Hanging Hex stuff, which I think doesn't really get a lot of love in 2022, but that stuff, and Black Market Activities, Architects, that stuff influenced me in a huge way, especially early on. So,
I've noticed some people have been posting more about like If Hope Dies, and that's like people are kind of revisiting that. And I think there's a lot of bands of that era that people are coming back to now that it's been like almost 20 years. But I'm like, I like that, you know, like your local scene and your local band had such an influence on you, because that was kind of my experience coming up too. For me, that was Stand Fast and Break of Dawn from Rochester. But you know, those kind of bands just really show you that like, this isn't just, you know, music isn't just something for rock stars or people who have like great equipment or a lot of connections. All it really takes is you just got to hang with your friends and stick with them and be sincere about who you are.
And I just want to say really quick, If Hope Dies, I think especially lyrically, influenced kind of like an entire generation of kids around my age from Auburn in a huge way, like to be critical thinkers, which is not popular now, right? Like at all. Yeah. But their vocalist, Allie, just an incredible vocalist, but lyricist and somebody who I think influenced people maybe more than they know, you know? I think that I'm lucky to have come from a scene where that was, you know, even though it was violent and chaotic and stuff, there was still kind of this, you know, like sort of like read a book mentality, I guess.
Yeah.
Which I am grateful for. So.
Yeah, Syracuse had that kind of going for it too. You know, kind of the more like deep thoughts and thinking for yourself, even if it means like questioning your friends or questioning the place you came from. So I wanted to touch upon just kind of like how you and I met each other. For our listeners at home, Mike and I met at a time when I was not very active in Rochester's local hardcore scene, but we came well acquainted with each other because we both worked out at World Gym. You know, one of the most noticeable things I think about you is your dedication to your fitness routine and kind of your diet regimen and all that. So I want to spend a little bit of time talking about the weight room. I think probably at one point in time, I might've been on the same level as you, like back in the day, but you clearly have got a,
I don't know, man, you were way bigger than me back then.
I fell off for a little bit, but I'm like back on it now and have got myself back into shape. But just tell us a little bit about how you got into lifting weights.
I think a little bit out of boredom. like just not, you know, kind of directionless and a little bit out of like, I was always like the skinny kid. I was kind of built like a string bean, and my dad is like really tall, really thin. My brother's the same way. And, you know, when I think when you kind of grow up in the environment I grew up in, it doesn't really pay dividends to be, you know, real skinny. So, yeah, just, I got into it. I'd say probably like really into it, maybe at like 18, I was living with my cousin out in Buffalo, and one of his good buddies was a weightlifter, and he kind of showed me the ropes, but I was like riding my bicycle 3 miles each way to the gym sometimes. And so I was like, you know, shredded, but not getting any bigger. And it just kind of honestly rolled for me from there. I just was more, even to this day, I think I'm more into it from a mental standpoint than necessarily for the sake of being stronger or bigger. I think it's good for you to get up and move, whether it's lifting weights or running or whatever. I just personally like to lift weights. But yeah, I love it. I still go. My wife probably hates me because I go more often than I should. But
I know that tension too. That's interesting because I had a similar background. I was like real skinny. In fact, like when I was in high school, there were some like jocks that used to call me Holocaust because I was like so skinny. They thought I looked like a Holocaust survivor. God. And at the time, I like really hated it. But now I'm like, oh, it's like a really metal like nickname. But like at some point after like enduring that kind of abuse for a couple of years, like somehow I like got hooked up with like this article that Henry Rollins wrote, and he was like talking about how he was skinny and like kids used to rip on him and bully him and beat him up. Yeah. And that kind of motivated me to do something similar. And, you know, it seems like you came from a similar place too. But for me also mental health is like crazy. Cause there was like a number of years where I like dropped off lifting weights regularly and my mental health just collapsed. So my advice to like anyone that like recognizes that in themselves, cause I saw that in myself at the time too. And I kind of lost sight of that in a devastating way, like just stick with it. You know, I mean, people who don't have that need or who don't have like issues that they got to constantly stay on top of and work through don't always understand. And it's funny because like my wife was like, she was supportive, but like, you know, there were times when she's like, come home, we gotta like watch some shit on Netflix or like catch up on Game of Thrones or some shit. And you know, like then I like kind of went through some difficulties, and now she's like way more supportive of me going to the gym. So you didn't make that mistake, so I'm like happy for you. You've cleared one hurdle that I didn't clear, which was having a kid. Like that was, I didn't know how to like do both at the same time. I couldn't figure that out until now. But like, tell us a little bit about like what your routine is like, you know, how that works for you.
Yeah. So, I'm lucky in a lot of ways because I have a career where I can kind of bend my hours to my will. Within reason. And up until very recently, and like due to COVID and whatever, my wife's schedule was a lot more flexible too. So I just, when we started talking about having a kid, I was just like, I have to be able to go to the gym. That's the one thing I got to be able to do like every day. We've just always made time for it as part of my routine, I think. Typically now, just as of the last few weeks, she took a different job, and I'm still going as much as I need to go, but it's a little bit more difficult for me to get there. But I think you'll make it work if you're really dedicated to it. You know, so, but yeah, it's typically my day is wake up, go to the gym, come home, do whatever I got to do with the kid and bring him to daycare, work, pick him up from daycare, come home, figure out what we're doing for dinner and kind of do the nightly routine and get ready for the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. I find I can't sleep if I don't do it. Like the days I don't go, I just don't sleep very well. But when I do, I like sleep well and shit. So, Well, like there's such a strong connection between like weightlifting and hardcore. And I got to say, I've like definitely rocked Missing Link when I'm working out. That's like prime gym tunes.
Nice.
So like what kind of stuff are you listening to like at the gym? What gets you like really going?
You know, it depends. There's days where I go in and I just am listening to like podcasts, you know, like, and mostly for me, it's it's like comedy podcasts or whatever. And, or there's days where I go in and I, you know, I'm a big time Queensway fan, Division of Mind. But, and then, you know, it's almost like for me, I'll listen to the same record in the gym for like a month and then I won't listen to it for like a year. So, it really just depends, you know, it depends on the mood for the day and whatever. And, sometimes though, I realized that, you know, maybe going into the gym at 7 a.m. and like putting on, Blood for Blood, Spit My Last Breath isn't like the best, you know, start to my day. Like I'm going to have a certain mindset for the rest of the day, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I honestly, I can lift while listening to like whatever. I didn't used to be able to. There's days where I go to the gym and I listen to R&B. Like just whatever is going on is what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Usually I'm like rocking terror or something, but sometimes I know what you mean. You got to have like a positive outlook. So I'll like put on like Youth of Today or something and get that going. But then like every once in a while, I'll listen to like a weird synth wave album or some shit that you wouldn't think would get you like pumped up, but it does the trick.
Yeah.
So I mentioned Missing Link a couple times before, and you know, for people who follow, you know, the various hardcore Instagram social media accounts, Missing Link is like all over the place, and you guys have you know, you've shared a stage with some pretty big hardcore acts, and if I think my memory serves correctly, you're even recorded by Hate56 and featured on a video for on his page, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. But you know, this isn't your first band, so kind of give us like a quick rundown of some of the bands you've been in or had a guest appearances in before Missing Link.
Yeah, so I actually dropped out of high school to tour with my first band, which was called Sacred Pledge. We were all, you know, based out of Auburn, all teenagers. CDC took us on our first tour. It was like 9 of us in the same van, and it was total chaos. But it was awesome. So yeah, I did that first. And I actually filled in for CDC the first time on that tour. So 16 years ago or something crazy like that, 15 years ago at least. And then I did a slam death metal band called As This Body I Exist, which is, it's kind of funny that it's full circle now, because at the time, like, people were not into that style really.
Yeah.
And now it's like every hardcore kid is doing a slam band. And then I started, I took like a kind of a break, I guess, from music. I just didn't have a lot going on. And I kind of had moved all over the Northeast for a little bit. And then I ended up filling in for CDC kind of semi-permanently for like quite a while. I did some European tours with them and a couple, I think one or two US tours. So yeah, I did that. And then pandemic hit and I didn't really have anything going on. And the guys were kind of starting Missing Link and they sent me a demo and just asked if I wanted to do it. And it was all guys that I had known through, at least our drummer, especially, and kind of, I don't want to say I grew up with him, but we had known each other for a really long time. And he played drums in World of Pain. So I toured Europe with CDC with them.
Okay.
And they sent it to me and just asked if I was interested in doing it. And that was that.
Awesome. Yeah. I got a lot of respect for CDC because they've been sticking around and doing it for a long time and been, dude, you know, through the ups and downs. So they seem like they're really dedicated too.
Yeah. John is an awesome, he's kind of like an awesome poster child for what hardcore is, just in the sense of like, you know, like CDC gets a lot of hate, you know, like throughout the years, but they have toured all over the world and he's taken, you know, he took me, you know, I got to see the world because of that dude. So, you know, to be like a poor kid from Auburn, New York, and then to be in like Paris.
Yeah.
You know, like I think hardcore kids kind of lose sight of that. They kind of are like, oh, I'm like a cool guy in a hardcore band. It's like, yeah, dude, you're getting flown across the fucking world to bark into a microphone like an idiot. Like if you don't, you know, if you can't kind of put it into perspective, then, but yeah, they, John especially, I love that dude to death, and I'm very grateful for kind of like all the stuff that I like, even missing Link. I wouldn't have really been as close with Paul if we hadn't done that tour together, you know? So.
Yeah. I think I remember seeing pictures from your Instagram on View in Paris with CDC in the catacombs, which is definitely like one of like probably the top 10 coolest places I've ever been.
We broke all the rules. We're like picking up bones and skulls. We're getting yelled at. I'm like, I don't give a shit. I'm in pain. What are you going to do? Kick me out? Okay.
No, I definitely like had to touch a skull because I'm like, well, what does this really feel like? And I'm like, this feels like this bone feels like plastic. This is fake. So bones feel like plastic. Fake skeletons in a catacombs. So Missing Link, the guys are based out of Long Island, but you're up here in Rochester. So you do a lot of traveling to meet up with them or?
Yep. Yeah. So they, three of them are in Long Island. Paul moved from Massachusetts to Florida recently. And then I'm obviously in Rochester. So yeah, anytime we play a show, at least two of us are usually flying somewhere. So.
Well, that's what I like about doing hardcore, like later in life and also with like all the technology that's happened. Cause the band I'm doing right now, World Purge, like three of us live in Rochester, but our vocalist lives in Syracuse. And then our guitar player who's written most of our songs is in Texas and soon to be in South Carolina. And, you know, we're able to like send each other demos of what we're doing. And you can just record so much shit on your phone that like, was not even imaginable, you know, 15 years ago. It's pretty cool. It definitely makes the community stronger, I think, in some ways. I mean, technology is a double-edged sword, and especially social media is a double-edged sword. It can be great and unify people, or it can divide people. But in total, I think it's definitely helped usher in like a whole new era of creativity for a lot of bands.
Definitely.
You had mentioned, one time when we were talking at Photo City about how when you were on that tour in Paris that you kind of like met up with some guys and got some information that really, you know, convinced you to go the path that you've gone with your business. So like, I know not only is like Missing Link doing well, but Glory Days Barber Company seems to be like one of the most popular in-demand shops in Rochester right now. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in the barber industry and how Glory Days came to be?
Yeah. So I was working at Lux, like you had mentioned, like pretty much forever. And I made really good money doing it. And it was, you know, easy work, but I was kind of wanting to shift more towards a career, you know, like kind of being a bar employee forever is like not really it. If you wanted to do the stuff that I wanted to do, you know, buy a house and, you know, have a family, just kind of like set myself up to be like a functioning member of society, I guess, for better or worse. And so I was on that same tour, and Paul is a barber and a very successful one, owns a bunch of shops, and actually Tristan from World of Pain is also a barber and owns at least one in California. So they just kind of convinced me like, dude, you could do this and you could make a good living, not even necessarily like do the stuff that they were doing, you know, and be able to like make your own hours when you get to a certain point, be able to leave to do tours if you needed or wanted and whatever. So, and I never was going to kind of have that sort of like corporate style job. So the day that I got back, I pretty much, and I had always been kind of good with money since becoming an adult. I just went and paid for school in cash so that I had to go. So put myself through barbering school, got out, worked a couple different places. I got really lucky because the dude who was my teacher hired me at his shop after. So I kind of got like a second education for free.
Oh, nice.
And then I, worked places for a few years, and then a buddy of mine that I worked with and I, we just kind of like realized where we were at wasn't doing too well as like the shop, not us, but just the overall vibe was off. And so my buddy Ryan and I decided to do our own thing, and here we are, and I'm grateful that it's doing really well. It's been awesome. We just literally yesterday was our 1 year anniversary. So
It's been, it seems like it's been longer than that to me. And you guys are having a lot of great success. Well, you've got a real talent for turning like one opportunity into another. And that's, I think, definitely, you know, what we just ran through with like meeting up with, you know, getting that information on tour and following that path and going from one thing to the next. That's phenomenal. How has hardcore influenced you like as a small business owner? Or has it? Maybe it hasn't.
Yeah. I mean, I think hardcore has just kind of influenced the person that I am. I don't necessarily know that it's influenced me as far as like the business itself as much as maybe like, you know, you know, we definitely had like a DIY ethic when making the shop. I mean, especially, you know, Ryan is sort of, you know, we came up with like the theme as far as like what we wanted things to look like or whatever, but he's really kind of like a visionary with like style and stuff like that. So I'm more of like the sort of nerd side, actually more doing like bookkeeping and just like paperwork stuff, licensing stuff. So, but yeah, we did almost everything ourselves. And because we both kind of have strong suits, I think that really helps, you know, cause you know, some of the stuff I wouldn't be able to do, you know, and some of the stuff he wouldn't be able to do. So, yeah.
Awesome. You guys like balance each other out. Definitely. One time at work, I had to like plan a charity golf tournament and I like, I've never played golf. I don't know anything about golf. I don't even really care for golf or the people who like golf, but you know, I got into it and I was like, okay, wait a minute. This is like setting up a hardcore show or like a hardcore fest. Like we got to like have attention to detail. We've got to keep track of where our money's going. We've got to keep track of who we've contacted and who we owe favors to and who owes us favors and call those in. So I definitely see how like, you know, even though I was told like punk rock is not the way to like a successful adult life, like definitely everything I learned about like managing money and managing my time and my relationships. Oh, totally. Like Ben being in bands, planning a tour, like knowing how to get to a place on time, knowing what to do when you don't get a lot of instructions. So it seems like you got that going for you too.
Definitely.
So like me, you're also a father, and I know how much work it is and how rewarding it can be. I think one of the things that has helped me be a better father has been my willingness to kind of go my own way and find my own path in life. And I definitely learned that from hardcore. In what ways has or has not, you know, maybe hardcore hasn't influenced you as a father, but tell us a little bit about how that, you know, how you bring that kind of spirit to, you know, the whole project of like raising another human being.
Yeah. So I actually think about this often because, my son is in, you know, the famous Threenagers right now. And, he is like a total terrorist at the moment. Like it's been chaos lately. And he just says no, like to everything. And I'm like, is this somehow like punk rock genetics? but it's hard because, you know, you want him to like listen and behave and whatever. But then I'm also like, yeah, but when he's like 20, this attitude will pay off like big time, you know, like you don't really want I don't want to like raise a child that just like agrees with everything, you know? Even if that means being disagreeable with me at, you know, rather often. But I think, you know, the kind of goal is to raise like a strong person. Right. So yeah, I think the ethic is there, unfortunately, maybe even ingrained in his DNA to a certain extent. So
I've often thought that too, like, cause I see some elements of that, like in my kids and including my 3-year-old who really likes to tell me like I'm wrong and he's not going to do what I say. Like on one hand, I'm like, no, you got to do what I say. I don't have the patience for this. But on the other hand, I'm like, you know, the purpose of this isn't to raise compliant children. This is to like raise resilient men. And I think, you know, I get that from hardcore and from punk rock. Yeah. The other thing that really has influenced me or that has helped me with my raising my kids is one of my sons has autism and we, you know, we go out places and, you know, he just doesn't understand kind of the unwritten rules of society and he's kind of just behaving his own way and it can be hard sometimes because people like look at you like, well, what the fuck's wrong with you and your kid, but that's when I like fall back on like hardcore and punk rock and like, well, I don't really care what a lot of these people think, like I'm gonna just do my own thing and he's gonna do his own thing and that's, you know, that's like the spirit of punk that's just gonna run through everything. So I totally get that and I love hearing that that's kind of your relationship to it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're closing out each episode of the Enterprise Hardcore podcast by featuring a song from a different regional band. And of course, we're gonna feature a Missing Link song at the end of this podcast. Sweet. After the credits, tell us a little bit about the song that you guys provided for us.
Yeah, so we just put this song out as a single. We're coming out with a new record on Never Ran, Never Will Records soon. I don't think I'm allowed to say the release date yet because they haven't announced it, but it's sooner than later. And record's called No Saving Grace. And so we just put this song out. It's done pretty well. I think people seem to dig it. I think the record as a whole is a major step up from the first release, and should be interesting.
Awesome. We'll play that out at the end. And where can people go to find out more about Missing Link and Glory Days Barber Company?
Yeah, so Glory Days, you could go to we have an Instagram page, just Glory Days Barber Co. You can go to our website, glorydaysbarber.co, for Missing Link. We've got Instagram, Twitter. We kind of aren't great at using those. We're not exactly the best like social media band, I guess, for better or worse, I guess, in this day and age. But I think it's Missing Link HC. Definitely follow Never Ran, Never Will Records, which is owned and operated by Richie Crutch. So shout out to him for kind of putting us on. And there's a lot of cool releases coming from that. Carried by Six, I think. And just a bunch of others. I think Risk. I don't know, man. The roster is pretty cool. But shout out to Richie for believing in us to kind of put out our record when I think a lot of people didn't, or you know don't give you the time of day. For it's almost like if you're in a big band, they'll put out anything you ever put out again, right? But then if you're not, then you kind of got to do it the old-fashioned way, which is fine by me. I'm not really in it for the popularity contest, and I don't really give a shit if no one likes us, so.
Well, there you go. All right, well, thanks for sitting with me and hanging tight during my first solo episode here. It's been great talking to you. You're welcome. And I've loved catching up. So everybody check out Missing Link and Glory Days Barber Co. And we'll join you again next time. Take care.
Man. Take care. Have a good one.
The Hardcore Archive podcast is Josh Lyons and Greg Benoit with creative support from Rob Antonucci.
This podcast is a product of the Rochester Hardcore community. Theme song provided by Stand Fast.
Visit Hardcore Archive podcast on Linktree to listen to past episodes.
Follow Enterprise Hardcore Podcast and Rochester Hardcore History on Instagram for updates about the podcast.
If you have an idea for an episode or would like to have your band's music featured during the closing credits, please contact us at hardcorearchivepodcast@gmail.com. Survive already. Survive.
Now you're monsters, fuller.